Welcome to the Pig Health Today podcast, where we talk all health all the time. Hear engaging interviews with today's leading industry experts. Hosted by Pig Health Today editors, podcast episodes highlight the latest ideas, insights, and advice to improve pig health, welfare, and performance.
Hi, I'm Rhonda Pick, managing editor with Pig Health Today. Joining me is Dr. Peter Davies, professor at the University of Minnesota. Welcome.
Thanks, nice to be here.
Antimicrobial resistance in pigs, is it a real thing? Should we be concerned?
There's definitely a lot of concern in the human community because they are facing with the emergence of a lot of clinically important antimicrobial resistance in the human population. On the animal side, we do a lot of antimicrobial susceptibility testing. We know that there are resistant organisms in the pig population, but the problem actually of dealing with clinical problems because of the antimicrobial resistance in pig pathogens is not on the same scale as it is in the human population. There's a lot of reasons that may be the case that really haven't been explored, but we really only have probably a couple of organisms, E. coli, the one we talk about the most, where resistance is, can be a clinical difficulty in some situations. For the most part, we don't have a lot of clinical problems with antimicrobial resistance in the pigs, and studies looking at resistance patterns in swine pathogens for the most part have shown them to be very stable over the long time. So we don't really have much evidence of increasing resistance to antibiotics in swine pathogens themselves.
So you briefly mentioned E. coli as one of the primary concerns in pigs. What would be some other examples?
From a pig health perspective, Streptococcus suis is another organism that's talked about, and that is, an emerging, it's very old, but it's emerging more as a clinical problem recently, so that's one organism. And on the other side, perhaps the second organism from the intestinal point of view is Salmonella. So clinical Salmonella infections happen in pigs as in people, but they tend to not be that common. Often there's other factors that make the pigs susceptible, but there's particularly certain serotypes of Salmonella where they're multiple drug resistance, and that the patterns change a lot over time because the serotypes tend to change over time, and the resistance is very often linked to particular serotypes. So we do see some multiple resistant Salmonella, and as I said, it's really a relatively unimportant problem, except in individual herds rather than across the industry, but also it's of particular importance as a major foodborne pathogen. So I think the concern over resistance in Salmonella is probably still even greater from perspective, public health concern than swine health concern. But again, with E. coli, they're probably the two where multiple drug resistances can appear and potentially be problematic.
How has the way that we evaluate antimicrobial resistance changed over the years?
Yeah. Well, one thing is as the industry's changed and herds have got higher, much bigger, the implications of treatment decisions have got greater in terms of, we've had very substantial susceptibility testing over years. Traditionally, I think that what's changing in all areas of biology at the moment is the introduction of molecular methods, and particularly new next generation sequencing, and the shift to genomic testing of pathogens, and also metagenomic testing of samples. So we've got tools now to explore the ecology of resistance that we wouldn't have imagined even 10 years ago. We're still in the learning phase with those. I think most of our susceptibility testing will probably continue to be based on phenotypic testing of pure cultures from diseased animals, because that's what we're interested in. We're a long way from really understanding those relationships, but new technologies are going to take us a long way in the next 5 to 10 years.
The Veterinary Feed Directive was implemented in 2017, which led to a decrease in antibiotics in feed. How have you seen that evolve as far as impact on antimicrobial resistance?
I think it's too early at this stage to be able to answer that question, and we may never directly answer that question. So certainly the regulatory changes that came in place in 2017 have been associated with, you know, substantial drop in sales of antibiotics in the food animal industries of the order of a third or so. I think it's unlikely, I think, that we will measure, have a measurable impact in through our existing surveillance systems. In Holland, where they've had, 50 to 60% reduction in total usage of antibiotics, they've been able to identify about a 20% reduction in resistance in E. coli, and that's just in measuring it in terms of the percentage of E. coli that are resistant, or so susceptible to all the antibiotics that they're testing. And so that shows that the impact is probably there. Just testing one organism is a very, it's sort of looking at a very small slice of the pie. And I think that's an area where we really need to have more meaningful surveillance of what resistance looks like in the animal population, and even how we think that we measure it quantitatively, because I think at the moment we don't really have an agreed mechanism for saying, if we're going to measure resistance as a quantitative element in an animal population, what are we measuring? For me, one of the major difficulties in trying to talk about quantifying antibiotic use and getting meaningful changes in antibiotic use is that we don't really understand the relationships between how patterns of use of antibiotics translates into changes in patterns of resistance at an ecological level. Certainly with certain drugs, particular drugs and particular drugs, we can see that there have been changes in resistance patterns, but what that actually means in terms of public health risks or potential environmental implications, we're still very early in the learning curve, I think.
So when you look at veterinarians who are, getting value out of what we're doing with antimicrobial resistance, tracking, monitoring, surveillance, how much of that applies from a real clinical standpoint in helping them make decisions when treating animals?
Well, I think it's essential. The information, having better information will always lead to more informed decisions. So I think, and that's why we see such common use of susceptibility testing in the swine industry, because even though there's still a lot of uncertainty about some of the clinical breakpoints and the categorizations of organisms as resistant and susceptible, and will that translate into treatment, it's still the best information that practitioners get at, and they're still using it a lot for that. I think similarly on surveillance of use, I think it's good for our industry to understand what our own practices are. So I think the main value at the moment of getting better information on antibiotic use is really to promote education, to promote stewardship, and again advance the discussion with some quantitative data on what's actually going on. I think that will help move the veterinary profession and the industry forward.
On a separate note, what are you hearing from producers as far as when they get into conventional production versus raised without antibiotics or no antibiotics ever? Are there things that you've heard and that we've learned from the comparison of those two production styles?
Raising pigs free of antibiotics is a challenging task because of the way they're born, they're weaned, they go through stressful periods of young animals, they have to live for 6 months. Particularly where we have, a number of problematic viral diseases in the pig industry, PRRS and influenza most notably, that make the pigs susceptible to bacterial infections. If you're starting in systems where those viruses, which have been difficult to control, are there, it becomes almost an impossible scenario to raise animals with no antibiotics and not incur casualties in terms of animal health and animal well-being. And I think overall, it's recognized that with antibiotic-free systems, there will be higher levels of disease, there will be higher levels of mortality and associated animal welfare concerns that can be substantial in some cases. And we need to acknowledge that those risks and that those trade-offs exist. And that's why the price of those products is typically not just demand-driven, but people won't be able to provide those animals unless there's the financial structure to make it a profitable business. So it is a challenge. It's something that there is a market for, and a lot of our industry is working towards doing that. But first of all, you have to be starting in a place of very good pig health with low pig health risks, and realize that it's not an easy thing to do. I think that's one of the points of general misunderstanding, and that over the course of the last 25 years or so that I've been in the US, most of the industry has changed a lot in terms of its structure and its operations, and most of those changes have been driven towards improving animal health and all in all out production and single source production. So the industry has worked really hard, and even air filtration systems to contribute. There's been a lot of investment going into biosecurity management to do all of the things that will try and sustain pig health and reduce risk of infection disease, and secondarily the need to use antibiotics. So I think that's something that's important to communicate, that the industry hasn't been sitting here doing nothing, relying on antibiotics, but it has put really substantial restructurings gone into preventive measures. So I think that's an important piece.
Thanks for listening to the Pig Health Today podcast. To get the latest news and interviews delivered to your inbox twice a week, subscribe to our e-newsletter by visiting pighealthtoday.com/join.